fight the Great Society again. They've got the Crusher programs that it would cost, we only looked at five, it cost $103 billion for five. And they sound good. One's the National Health Insurance, one is Humphrey Hawkins, one's a child development bill. Who's against child development? I'm not. But I'm against just adding more and more money. We've probably got a dozen programs now dealing with child development. And there is a basic difference, and that's the real thrust. I think McCarthy has said there's not much difference, but of course he's running too.
Is there any evidence that these potentially very costly programs have actually been thought out, or are they largely window dressing?
Well, if we take Humphrey Hawkins, for example, it's obvious it wasn't thought out, because Carter's now saying, well, he's not for the original version, he's for the amended version. Well, what is the amended version? I think he's for the Kennedy-Corman health insurance. I bet if you ask him what it does, he couldn't tell you. And he wouldn't tell you what it cost. I think it's $70 billion to be conservative. He says he hasn't read the bills vetoed by Gerald Ford, but it's a sign of, it shows lack of compassion. Well, how does he know unless he's read the bill? And I think we're in the same thing where you run against the people who are in as heartless and cruel and no compassion, and look at the unemployment figures. And part of this comes from the fact that we've never properly dealt with the Vietnam War. Johnson refused to raise taxes, refused to look it straight in the face. And part of our economic problems are just sort of catching up with us, and hopefully they're going to be behind us, because we have, or the president's cut inflation in half. There are 88 million people in the workforce. 3 million people have gone back to work in the last 18 months. And, you know, we think there's progress.
Senator, if you and the president take office, what do you do in the way of practical programs to kind of help the salivate the support of the people of Governor Reagan, which was substantial at the convention? And in a conservative point of view, what does Gerald Ford do as president to go to that area?
I think essentially he does what he's been doing. I think there was some question on who was the more conservative. And of course, Reagan was very popular. He's an outstanding Republican, and he had a lot of support among Democrats and independents because of his record in California. And he could stand up and articulate like no one else can articulate in our party. And so he had all that going for him. But I think when you look at it, this cold turkey, there wasn't much difference in their philosophical views. I think the Reagan people want a balanced budget. They're not against programs that help people. They don't want to waste a lot of taxpayers' money, and President Ford feels the same way. They're concerned about controls, whether they're gun controls or some other controls. They're concerned about ever-increasing excessive power by one group in America, labor leaders. And I don't really see any problem. In fact, I haven't discussed it at length with Governor Reagan, but philosophically, I never could see much difference. I decided to be a Ford delegate the night before our state convention in Kansas, and I made a speech. I tried to be candid, and I think when I finished, there was some doubt on the mind of each side who I was for. It was a very difficult choice because they pretty much the same philosophically.
Getting back for a moment on employment, it's true we have 88 million people in the workforce, and it's increased by 3 million in the last 18 months, but this still is not enough because the rate is increasing. What could you do to decrease the unemployment rate? Would you, for example, endorse something like the Kemp bill?
Well, Jack Kemp has represents one of the districts with the highest unemployment rate. And there's some problems with the Kemp bill. I think the administration has some problems with the Kemp bill. We've got CETA programs and others that provide jobs and job training. You've got all the opportunities for public works programs and all the other federal programs that put people on city payrolls. I think we proceed as the president has with revenue sharing. He's for it very strongly. It's increased. It's going to be more money for states and city and county government. That might be the way to look at some of the public employment. But I've got to believe he's got to stick with his game plan to drive down inflation and let employment, for the most part, be picked up through the private sector. Now, if it gets worse, then you've got to take another look at it. I don't think he can lock himself in. But I know they're looking at some program which would provide tax credits through the private sector, where if you would hire someone, not just somebody you were going to hire in any event, but to find meaningful employment for someone, part of that salary would be paid through a tax credit. Now, that is indirect to federal employment, but after a while it's phased out, and that man becomes a taxpayer and a productive worker. And we've got to remember, too, when we look at the figures of 7.9, that doesn't mean that those 7.9 are always the same people. A lot of people are out of work because they quit one job and looking for another. They want to find a better job, or they don't want to work in the wintertime. They want to go south, or they don't want to work in the summertime. They want to go north. And if we're going to take away all those, I think the unemployment rate would be even lower. But it is high among young people, particularly among handicapped Americans and black Americans. We visited a rehab meeting last week in Florida, where we were told that, for example, only one out of eight blind Americans has a job. And so there's some work to be done in that area. That's another area that I think I can help in.
Do you think the 3% figure is still a reliable figure to go for employment? For instance, some of the people you described that are not in the job market, particularly, for instance, the unemployed woman with a family that is now coming into the forefront the last few years. Are we talking really in essence about 5 or 6% figure as something that's acceptable?
That's another point I should have made. You know, another reason for high unemployment, there are more people coming into the workforce. The economy's better. People are looking around. You've got the very thing you mentioned. Mothers looking for part-time work. They don't find it, so they're listed as unemployed. They've never worked before. And it's really part of the strength of the economy that makes the unemployment figure look really worse than it is. But I don't know a precise answer to your question.
What's an acceptable figure for you?
Well, it's always been 4% on the theory that you're going to have movement, you're going to have people changing jobs. Some people can't find work, others can't work, and there are a few who don't want to work. I left Nebraska this morning, and we've been out to a country elevator where the farmers were complaining because they couldn't find anybody to work. Well, that really doesn't answer the question, because they don't live in an area where you have layoffs in the auto workers or defense plants as you have in California. But in that area, you know, they need help. I don't know how you put a percentage figure. I think you just do the best you can and hope that the ultimate is that everybody who can and wants to work is working. And that figure could be 4%, 3%, 4.5%. I don't think we just set some arbitrary goal as they do in the Humphrey Hawkins bill and then say to the American taxpayer, we're going to spend as much as your money as it takes to get unemployment down to 3%. And that's precisely what they do. Except in the Humphrey Hawkins bill, they put the monkey on the president's back. He's got to come up with the economic plan, so they take all the heat off the Congress that way. We're good at that in the Congress, taking credit for all the good and blaming a president, any president, for all the bad.
Speaking of heat on the Congress, do you believe that if your aspirations regarding welfare and food stamp reform were made effective, that would impel some people to go back to work who are now off the work roll?
In fact, there have been a reduction of, I think, but it's dropped. I think more than 1 million have gone off food stamps. Most people in America want to work. I think there's this feeling that a lot of people would rather not work. Well, that may be true, but people are just going off the food stamp program, the natural course events, again, because the economy is stronger, they're finding work. They can't sustain themselves on food stamps, but under our bill, we have a work requirement. The limits are lower. You have to be in almost the poverty class to qualify for food stamps, and we would remove some people from the program.
Senator, when you debate Senator Mondale, I think the question will be raised on the point of the fact that your position with Senator Mondale and tenure and experience is somewhat comparable. Do you think, first of all, two questions. First of all, should the debate between you and Senator Mondale be on your merits to be vice president, or should you be in defense of Mr. Ford or Governor Carter? And secondly, what would you like to say? I mean, what is your thinking on what you're going to say in those debates?
Well, I would hope it would be on the level of why we're qualified to be vice president, and maybe president. That's really the ultimate question. If something should happen to either Carter or Ford, if they whoever may be elected, I think there is a, you know, let's face it, I think maybe half the Americans now, or maybe less, know who I am. I think early on many people thought it was something you drank or that it was some relief program. And I don't know, I think Mondale had the same problem. So now we're up to 50%, which I don't know if it's good or bad. Maybe if more people knew us, that we'd be hurting our leaders. But I would hope the debate focuses on, are we qualified, first of all, to be vice president? Now, some say, well, you don't need any qualifications for that office. It's indoor work and no heavy lifting, you know, and that's sort of the end of it. But I think beyond that, you've got to answer the question, are you qualified to be president? We're going to try to keep it that level. But we've debated for a long time in the Budget Committee and occasionally on the Senate floor. He's a very bright person and very able and very liberal. And it ought to be, I don't think many people will watch it except our friends and relatives, but it would be interesting.
What kind of debate do you want, eyeball to eyeball or with moderator and panel, or what format would you like?
I have Senator Stevens and Senator Javits are sort of my advisors on that. They're both excellent debaters, and their advice is to wait till after the first presidential debate. They may even forget about us, you know. They may just say, well, that's a throwaway. I think the League of Women Voters met, and they said, now let's see, we got to have presidential debates, and somebody, as they were leaving the room, said, oh, that's right, there are two guys running for vice president, and they probably didn't know our names, and said, well, we ought to just throw them in there for sort of comic relief.
Do you have any ambitions on your own to be president someday?
I never really thought much about it. I thought I could do it, but I never thought it would happen.
Well, if you're vice president, a lot of people will think about it.
Well, I'll think about it, too. And the one thing you have in that job is a lot of time to plan.
Time on airplane.
Do you think the debate will stick to issues and substance and qualifications, or do you think it will get into personality?
I don't know. If Ford comes out dressed as a bunny tonight, I'd be surprised.
I meant your...
I think it'll be pretty much on the issues. Of course, I think we are constrained. After all, we are... we don't want to be the tail wagging the dog, because we're the tail, you know, and... I don't want to say we're bound by what the head of our ticket does, but after all, we're out supporting the president's program, I am, and he's supporting Carter's positions when he knows what they are. And I assume we're pretty much going to have that format. But I hope at the same time we can talk about our qualifications and what we've done in the Congress. Now, I haven't got my name on many pieces of legislation because I'm a member of the minority party. And when you look at some of the stuff he's got his name on, I guess I'm thankful mine isn't on that, you know, too many of it.
Lynn tells me our time expired 59 one half minutes ago. Could I ask one last question? This is the first time we've had publicly financed campaigns. Is this making your life easier?
Well, I think it does. It does one or two things that I think are a plus. I'm not certain it's the right thing. It avoids all the receptions and other things you go to where you have where you sort of perform for the contributors. And it saves the president a great deal of time. He doesn't plan to do any fundraising. We're still doing it for our friends who are running for Congress or governor or the Senate. So I think from that standpoint, it takes a lot of pressure off as far as money is concerned. You're limited by law, and both sides says it's not enough. But it also gives the party more responsibility. We went through that in 72, where a separate organization really ran the campaign. The Republican National Committee had very little input. But now the Democrat Party and Republican Party can raise funds. They can help the presidential candidates and other candidates. So I guess from that standpoint, I have to say that, though I'm not certain it's still the right thing, I can just see it spreading to include senators and congressmen and then get down to governors and state legislators. And before long, like any other federal program, it's going to perpetuate all those in office, and there are going to be abuses. And I assume there are abuses already. Some evidence a little out of California where a little street money was walking around, money still unaccounted for. And but I guess as far as pressures, we don't have as many pressures. We're not writing letters, not calling people, please send money.
That should make your life easier.
Yeah, it does.
One last thing, and I know Nick said his was the last, but I must ask you if you believe or do you think that Senator Mondale would raise the issue in your debate of the somewhat questionable or at least reportedly questionable campaign contributions to you or to your office?
I hope he does. I mean, if he has any doubt about it, because I've got some I want to raise. About $105,000 unreported in 72, and a few other things that the press is not interested in, you understand, the New York Times or the Washington Post. But I don't say that with any vindictive spirit, but I don't see Senator Mondale raising any question about campaign contributions. But if he does, we'll answer directly, and we'll also raise some questions of our own. And I think it really is unfortunate that, getting back to your initial question, that they're going back to 1964 and somehow raising doubts about the president because somebody paid for a golf.
Just for the record, they won 1973 also.
Yes, well, 73 and 64. But again, I've got to believe that we're entitled to have friends. Now, if we can be bought for a golf game, I guess it just seems to me that. And also, you got to remember the special prosecutors are Democrats.
Thank you.
This hour, he is anxiously awaiting the great debate between President Ford and Jimmy Carter, which will be coming up in just about an hour or so. Senator Dole is live at this moment at the Westgate Hotel, and we say good evening and welcome to San Diego, Senator. I just stepped on my earphone, and if I get it in, we can talk.
Thank you very much.
At this point, Senator, I think everyone wants to know what is really at stake in tonight's debate.
I think there's a great deal at stake. It seems to me that President Ford has an opportunity to demonstrate to the American people that he's perceived as a leader, and I think he will do that this evening. I'm counting on that. It should be very exciting and very interesting. We're looking forward to it.
We have been reading all week, Senator, on the wire services and seeing the network correspondents put out reports that both President Ford and Jimmy Carter have been doing a good deal of homework for tonight's debates. Now, how well do you think the president's going to do?
I think the president will do very well. They're talking about issues that he's very familiar with and worked with and has had a great deal of personal experience. I'm not selling Governor Carter short. He's a very bright, able person. It'll be a good debate. I just believe when it's all over, the American people will understand that President Ford has the experience. That's a big word. Experience is a big word, and has demonstrated his leadership capabilities.
If you do all your homework and all the rest of what goes along with it, what does it actually take then to really win one of these things?
Well, it's very difficult. I think it depends on how you're perceived. You may cite statistics. You may have a regular laundry list of things that you've done or would like to do. But I think he must be perceived as sincere and honest and open. And in this area, President Ford has no equal.
Do you think that Jimmy Carter's Playboy interview is trying to hurt him in the campaign in the coming weeks and months ahead?
I don't know. I really haven't commented on that article. He gave the interview. It's a problem he's created for himself, and I'd just soon not comment on it. I really don't know. I think it's out there. People can read it. They can make their own judgment.
Well, as a candidate, magazines, newspapers, television stations come to you, and they want interviews. How would you react if Playboy came to you and said, we want to do an interview? Would you say no?
I would say no.
Why?
I think there are many other forums available to candidates where we can cover the issues and talk about the problems of America. And anybody who might want to read Playboy can see my position on the issues on this station or in some written form. But I just make my judgment be no. Now, Senator Mondale wasn't interviewed by Playboy. President Ford declined. Governor Carter wants to touch all the bases, and he did.
After the Republican convention, there was a good deal of talk, not only about the debate tonight, but about the debate between you and Senator Mondale.
Right.
We haven't heard much about that lately. Is there any sort of a movement afoot for such a debate?
Yes, there will be a debate about mid-October, but it's about like the last half of a double feature. I mean, the big stars are on tonight. They'll be the big stars throughout the debate series. We'll have our debate. We're somewhat constrained. I'm out to support President Ford. He'll be supporting Governor Carter, and that's about what it'll be. But it should be interesting, and it will happen sometime around October 15th.
Once again, on the subject of debates tonight, we all remember those debates of 1960 between former President Nixon and former President Kennedy. At that time, people said that one emerged because of a better personality than the other. Do you think that personality is going to be one of the big things that determines a winner in tonight's debate between President Ford and Jimmy Carter?
It may be a factor. Personality is, if you can project your personality on television, I think as I look back in 1960, Kennedy won the first debate. Nixon never really recovered from that, but also, of course, Nixon wasn't feeling well that first debate. But you can project your personality. I think people at least feel they can tell whether you're being honest and open and sincere in what you're saying. That means a great deal to the American voter.
Well, we thank you very much, Senator. We are going to be down at the Westgate Hotel immediately following that debate this evening to get your reaction to it and find out how you feel it went. And we thank you very much for taking time out of your busy schedule to join us.